It was just this month that both the federal attorney general and the president appeared in California and criticized the state for its posture on the crackdown on illegal immigration. Federal agents have been more active since last year, making more arrests and rounding people up for deportation. Local jurisdictions and the state declare sanctuary status by and large, so the feds don't get much help. News reports from last fall told stories of farmers having a hard time finding workers to bring in the crops. Let's find out where the situation stands now. Brian Little is the director of employment policy for the California Farm Bureau Federation and also the chief operating officer of the Farm Employers Labor Service. Thanks for joining us, Brian.
Thanks for having me.
So, given the fact that Donald Trump's been in office for more than a year now, obviously a lot of this has played out already. What was harvest season like last year, for example, in finding workers?
A lot of the enforcement activity that has made a lot of news in the last few weeks wasn't happening last year at harvest time, or at least it wasn't as high profile as it has been this year. So I've gotten phone calls from a lot of producers in the last few weeks asking me, am I going to have a labor force this year? And I honestly can't answer the question because it's hard to predict what behavior is going to be. There's been a lot of publicity, as we all know, and some of the sweeps in the Bay Area where they've been picking up people, ICE has been picking up people who they have deportation orders against, and anyone who may be in the vicinity of that person who they believe can't demonstrate their legal presence in the United States. And then they've also been serving a lot of notices of inspection, which is when they're looking for looking to audit your I-9s and related documents. They can either serve that by mail or they can serve it in person. And recently ICE has been choosing to serve a lot of those notices in person to a lot of businesses and then doing press releases and talking about it. So ICE has been kind of pumping up the media reaction to a lot of this. I've gotten a lot of reports from producers who their employees are telling them are concerned about going out in public, even coming to work sometimes. The big storms we've been having lately have probably delayed the harvest of some things like asparagus and cherries, which are usually the first things that come off in the springtime. And it's hard to know exactly what kind of an effect it's going to have on those early season crops.
Yeah, I have to admit, I think in terms of where we are on the Oregon side of the line and thinking in terms of things getting harvested in the fall, but California being a year-round agricultural state, you have things getting harvested all the time.
Well, there's something going on virtually every month of the year, whether it's down in the Imperial Valley in southeastern California, where they're part of the winter salad bowl, or just about everywhere else in the state. You're right, there's something going on all the time.
So the fact that ICE is choosing to, and this is Immigration and Customs Enforcement for people who don't know the acronym, but the fact that they're choosing to do these audits in person and then do news releases, this is what generally gets called a raid in the news media, isn't it?
Well, they're not actually doing the audit. They're serving notice of their intention to audit the employer's documents. That triggers a requirement for them to give the employer at least 3 days to respond to that notice. And so there isn't, it's an odd thing to do, I think. It is essentially nothing more than an office visit, although the fact of their presence generally causes some concern on the part of workers. And then our state law in California now requires employers to give notice to employees when they receive a notice of inspection and to post that in their place of business, at places where employees normally would receive notice. So that tends to generate, I've heard people call that a run notice for employees who know that they're not legally present in the United States. And so that has caused some disruption. Most of what I've heard about has been with agricultural processors. For example, we got through the citrus harvest on the Sierra foothills, but a lot of that audit activity started happening with citrus packers in the counties along the Sierra foothills. So there was a fair amount of disruption, from what I understand, with their workforces and sort of this game of musical chairs where one packer would get an audit notice, he'd do the post. The employees would see that happening because they come to do it in person. Then the employer would post a notice. His workforce would disappear and go to work for another packer down the road or in the next town over who had not received any such notice. And we just play this gigantic game of musical chairs when ICE does this sort of thing, and I kind of wonder what it actually accomplishes. But the answer to your question is no, this is not the kind of raid activity that you saw ICE's predecessor, the INS, doing in the 1970s and 1980s.
Brian Little's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange with the California Farm Bureau Federation, where he's the director of employment policy and he's the chief operating officer of the Farm Employers Labor Service. So he knows a lot about where people are looking for agricultural workers in California. You can join the conversation on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Let's get some real basic facts and figures here. Between farms and agricultural processing facilities, I mean, what kinds of numbers of people are needed in California on a seasonal basis?
I don't really have any good numbers about processors, but I can tell you that agricultural employers employ about 480,000 people in a window of time between August and October every year. So that's usually our peak employment period. And I think it probably wouldn't be a big stretch to maybe add another 100,000 people or so in processing, and then there's transportation, and then there are all the services on the front side, seed, fertilizers, irrigation equipment, farm equipment, and the transportation of commodities to processing facilities, and then on to brokers and buyers and things like that. So there are, for the 500,000 people or so that are working, actually doing agricultural work on farms in peak seasons, I'd be willing to bet there are probably 3 to 4 other jobs upstream and downstream that are dependent on that. So you're talking about a pretty substantial economic impact, and it's a big economic impact in communities up and down the Central Valley, on the Central Coast, and the Imperial Valley, and other major ag production areas in California.
I've seen figures, Brian, in the neighborhood of 80% for agricultural workers being foreign-born across the country. Is that pretty much the case in California?
I'd say that's probably accurate for us, too.
And what is the trend in legal status of these workers? I mean, employers, I have to assume that the advice coming out of your office would be, you know, hire people whose papers are in order.
Well, one of the things that really that irks me, I hear a lot of people talk about farm employers employing people who are undocumented, and that simply isn't true. Everybody has documents. There's some question about the provenance of those documents. It's not that hard for someone to create documents that appear to be genuine, but in fact are not. We all know that identity theft is a significant problem, and that there are a lot of identities out there floating around that can be misused. And so what people will do is they'll go to a flea market and they'll buy whatever documentation they need for a few hundred dollars that will allow them to work in the United States. And your obligation as an employer is to look at the documents you're being offered by a potential employee and to make a judgment as to whether or not those documents, number one, appear to be genuine, and number two, appear to relate to the person offering them. If those documents can meet those two tests, you have a legal obligation to accept them, unless you have a good reason to believe that they're not genuine. And if you don't, then you've committed discrimination against that person under both federal law and California state law.
Do a lot of the workers come under the H-2A visa program?
Out of our 480,000 worker workforce, and by the way, I should say that 480,000 figure, there's been some research done by an emeritus professor at UC Davis who looks at agricultural economics issues, and he reckons that most farm employees don't actually work a full year, that they'll work about a third of a year, and they'll do other jobs and do other things the other parts of the year. So that 480,000, over the course of a year, there might be as many as two people who fill each one of those jobs. So you could be looking at an economic impact and an economic footprint as much as the number of people affected by it could be, in fact, be much larger than that 480,000 figure I gave you before. I'm sorry, what was your original question?
It was about the H-2A visa program.
Oh, yeah, the H-2A visa program. So out of that 480,000, let's call that a solid number. We're bringing in 3-4 years ago, it was about 5,000 to 6,000 employees. Now we're up to about 16,000 to 18,000 for this year. And obviously that's a pretty small proportion of the 480,000 that we're going to need at peak season.
So in your role in advising people in the ag business who are going to be hiring people, has the advice changed based on what's been happening with immigration enforcement by the feds?
Well, there really is no good alternative right now for agricultural employers to be able to rely on any kind of a program like the H-2A program, and that's one of the reasons why it's so small in relative terms in California. Even in national terms, we have an agricultural labor force that's between 1.5 and 2.5 million, depending on how you count them. And I know that sounds like a very broad range, and it is, because there's very little agreement on how you should count people. But even nationally, out of that, let's call it 1.5 million member labor force, the H-2A program is bringing in about 200,000 people nationally. So it's a very small part, and the reason for that is that it's expensive to use and it's cumbersome. So one of the things that poses a particular problem for California agricultural employers is the requirement to provide housing for workers that you bring in under the H-2A program. We all know about the housing shortage in California. It gets a lot of news, yes, media coverage, and that same problem afflicts rural areas almost as much as it does urban areas. It's very difficult to build anything, and the handful of agricultural employers who have been successful in building housing for farm workers in the last few years will tell you that it takes 1 to 3 years to get through the local permitting processes and everything else you're required to do before you can turn the first spoonful of dirt and start building something. So if someone's looking at potentially spending millions of dollars, perhaps, to build farm worker housing, and you're looking at the uncertainty that goes with the regulatory burden of starting to do that, I think you're going to give very, very, very careful thought to whether you're willing to try to invest that much money that you might not even be able to complete the project that you set out to do. But if you're going to commit to using the H-2A program, you absolutely have to provide housing. That's one of the program requirements. And, of course, housing is difficult to provide in California, and it's very, very expensive.
We're talking about agriculture and immigration with Brian Little at the California Farm Bureau Federation here on the Jefferson Exchange. So does it look like this year you might be even more shorthanded at farms and agricultural processes than you were a year ago?
Well, I don't think the H-2A program is going to be able to grow fast enough to be able to meet the need. It has about a 60 to 90 day lead time built into it. Mm-hmm. So by the time growers realize that they're going to be critically short of workers, it's going to be too late for the H-2A program to be able to respond to that. I think at this point it's just too early to tell exactly what's going to happen, because I've done this interview with people like you every year for the last 7 or 8 years. And every one of the hosts that I've talked to have asked me to make the same prediction that you just asked me to make. And every year I say, I don't know. It seems as though people figure out ways to get along. I think it's driving the industry in the direction of being more capital intensive and less labor intensive. I think that the trend you're seeing in California, where we're planting, you know, more and more almonds and walnuts and things like that, that there's both a market for that commodity, but it also has the advantage of being relatively less labor intensive than a lot of other things. You've seen a massive movement in the wine grape production industry from hand harvested wine grapes to machine harvested wine grapes. And as far as I'm aware, I this may not be true, but as far as I'm aware, the hand harvested wine grapes that are left in California are primarily the, you know, $50 to $90 to $100 bottles of wine in Sonoma and Napa. Just about everything else these days is hand harvested, unless the hillside that the vineyard is planted on is just too steep to accommodate mechanical harvesters. So
you're saying the crops themselves have actually changed because of the labor pressure?
Both the crops that growers choose to grow, as well as the way they choose to grow it, has changed.
All right. And, so when you say less labor intensive, does it mean more mechanized picking where you just need fewer people? Yes?
Yeah. So you got something like almonds that, you know, 25, 30 years ago, you hired a gang of people with bags and long sticks to walk through the grove and knock the almond pods off the trees and pick them up. Now you have machines that grasp the trunk and shake the trunk and shake the almonds out of it, and then sweepers that come along behind and sweep them up. And that requires, instead of a gang of 20 or 30 people, you need 3 or 4 people to drive those machines.
Have employers put out some incentives to try to sweeten the deal for people who do show up to work for them?
Yeah, employers have been have consistently over the last several years been having to bid up wages, offer things like 401ks and health care and things like that to be able to, even if they're too small, to be covered by the Affordable Care Act, in order to just be able to be competitive. And growers are also relying more and more on farm labor contractors. Farm labor contractors have the capacity to be able to provide 9 to 10 months of employment for a farm worker in any given year, where most individual growers can't do that. So farm labor contractors were up, last I understood, we're up to around 40 to 45% of the labor force is provided to farm employers by farm labor contractors. And I suspect that's only going to grow.
So, Brian, does the work get done? I mean, I saw at least one headline from last fall that said something about crops rotting in the fields. I can't imagine that happened much, though.
It's hard to attribute to the degree that stuff doesn't get harvested. I think it's hard to attribute that to one particular cause. But I think that agricultural labor shortages probably are going to contribute to that to some degree. So what's going to happen is you're going to look at an acre of strawberries, and you're going to be looking at the market price today, and you're going to try to figure out whether if your crew, you're going to have to pay them overtime, whether the amount of money it's going to cost you to harvest that acre of strawberries is going to be something you're going to be able to recover in the market price of that crop today. And strawberries are very short-term, kind of a short-term thing, where you got to get it off today or else it's not going to have any market value. So you're going to look at that and you're going to make a decision based on a whole lot of factors, one of which may or may not be labor supply. I think that it's not unusual for stuff to just not be harvested because it doesn't make sense to do so. But I think that when you start having these kinds of problems where labor is getting more and more expensive and more scarce, that people are going to, it's going to influence the decisions that growers might make to decide to harvest that next acre of strawberries or not.
And as you said, even a decision on what to put in the ground in the first place, what to plant, what to grow. All right, yes. All kinds of decisions ahead for the agriculture industry in California, which is huge, of course. And we are talking to Brian Little, who's the Director of Employment Policy and the Chief Operating Officer of the Farm Employers Labor Service at the California Farm Bureau Federation. Brian, thanks for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you.